yet they all share in the same conviction that Jesus Christ is our hope. I think that's what brings all of us together right here, the fact that the Holy Spirit is the common bond. I think that is the essence of brotherhood, the meaning of friendship. That's why we like to have people here for conferences, call it whatever you want to, meetings, get-togethers. But coming together in the name of the Lord is where it's at. This is where we get together and formulate our plans and get our minds together, our spirits charged up to go out and be ministers to the world. I think the weekend has been, for me, has been a challenge in many ways from the things that I've heard. I hope you feel the challenge that I have felt, a challenge to move forward, take a step that perhaps you've been afraid to take before, to be responsible in an area that you have not felt responsibility in before. We've had times to sing, we've had times to laugh, mostly at Randy Gibson. I've enjoyed having you here. It's been a real grand time for me. Today we're going to be especially blessed. I don't know how many of you know Barry St. Clair. Some of y'all might have been in his seminars yesterday. He's with the Home Mission Board in Atlanta. I've known Barry for several years. You've probably heard of his Reach Out program. He has a wife that's about 8 times prettier than him. And he has a lovely son that I hope looks like his wife. He's smiling over here. He's going to get his This time right here together is a time when we want to bring it all together. We want to bring a thrust, give you an idea of what Christian ministry is, to give you something to take home, something to think back on and pick you up when you're down. This is what Barry is going to try to direct us as the Spirit leads in our hearts. This is what he's going to try to show us where to go. So Barry, if you'll come now, how to lead us in that way.
Well, I'm glad to be with you. I don't know. That's as close as I'm going to get, I believe. I think most of y'all are from around North Carolina. Is that correct? Most of you from around there? Some of you from Virginia, South Carolina. Where are y'all from tonight? Charleston, that's right. All right, Charleston got some girls from Winthrop and all that kind of stuff. So we got some people from South Carolina, we got some people from North Carolina, some people from Virginia. Did they leave? Y'all are still here? BPI? Virginia Tech? What? Averett. Okay. I got you. That's great. That's good. Well, I'm from up in that part of the country, and I grew up up there, up in West Virginia. And boy, just really loved up there. I was a little kid. We used to live all up in mountains and everything. You know how it is up there. There's nothing but mountains up there, right? And I grew up in Princeton, West Virginia, which is really close to there. And as I grew up there, I had all these, kind of weird experiences. But one of the things that happened along the way was when I was just a little kid, my mom used to take me down to the store. And we'd go down to the store on Saturday morning. And every time we'd go down there, there were always these same 3 people down there. And they were mountaineers. And I don't know what you all call them here in the What do y'all call them in North Carolina? You call them rednecks? Is that what you call them or something like that? I don't know. I don't know what you call them. We call them mountaineers, West Virginia Hicks or something like that. And so every Saturday I'd come down the street, and there would be these with my mommy, you know, and we'd be standing there walking down the street, and these same 3 guys would be standing there, and they'd have these bowed legs, and they'd just be standing there. I'd say, mommy, look at those bow-legged mountaineers. And she said, son, she said, listen. She says, don't say that. Don't say that, because if you say that, this was rude. They're liable to hear you. You'd be embarrassed. They'd be embarrassed and everything. So just don't say it. So we came down the next week. There was these same 3 guys, and they were all standing there. And I said, mommy, look at those bow-legged mountaineers. She said, son, she says, if you do that again, she said, I'm going to have to punish you, and you're going to be in real trouble. And so we decided that we'd go down the next Saturday, because we went down there every Saturday, you know, and there were the same three guys, same bowed legs, same mommy holding the same mommy's hand, and there we were standing there. They were standing over there, and I said, "Mommy, mommy, look at those bow-legged Mountaineers." And they were standing over there, you know, and the whole bit. She says, "Okay, that's it. That's it. All week long, every day, all week, 5 hours a day, you're going to have to study Shakespeare." I thought, "Oh, I couldn't even spell Shakespeare." So we got home, but we started studying that stuff that day. 5 hours a day, Hamlet, Othello, all the stuffy old poems and all that stuff. But we really got into it, and finally after that whole week, boy, studying 5 hours a day, we came down the next week, and there we were, holding the same mommy's hand, same in front of the same store, same three guys, same bowed legs. I said, "Mommy, mommy, look!" And then I stopped, and I said, "Hark, what manner of men are these that wear these their pants in parentheses?" Now, maybe that's why I was an English major in college. I don't know. Maybe that's why I love Shakespeare so much. But it's good to be with you. It's good to know where you're from, where I'm from. And I'm going back down. Some of y'all are going back to the north up where it's cold. And I'm going back down to Atlanta where it's real nice and warm this afternoon. And I'll be thinking about you, okay? Listen, you know, I really want to really kind of move into what we're trying to do here this morning and really share some things with you that I think are extremely important. And I think the one thing that we're talking about here this weekend, and one thing that we're talking about that's so important, is missions and ministry. And it would seem to me that there's right at the heart of this, there's some things. There's one particular thing that's really the key thing of everything that we're talking about. And a lot of times, you know, we get so caught up in doing so many things, we kind of get lost in it all. Let me tell you about when I was in the eighth grade, and there was this buddy of mine named Tom Whitehead, and he was in the ninth grade. And Tom was the kind of guy who was in the ninth grade, he was about 6'5", you know, and that's real tall in the ninth grade. And especially when you only weigh about 86 pounds, like he did, see? And he was about 6'5", and weighed about 86 pounds, and about 20 of those pounds were right down there on his feet. And, you know, just huge. He had to wear at least a size 12 or 13 shoe, you know. And so Tom would come flat-footed, clumping along, you know. And he played basketball on the basketball team. Kick that kid out of here. I'll tell you about my little boy in a minute. We'll get to that. And so Tom played on the basketball team, and he was in the ninth grade, and I was in the eighth grade, you know, and Tom was just tall and gawky and skinny and one of the ugliest guys for his age that I've ever seen in my entire life. You know, I wasn't any pretty thing, but he was just tall and ugly and skinny and gawky. And you know, we used to really make fun. We'd tell all the skinny jokes about him, you know, all those corny things like, "Hey, Tom, run around in the shower so you can get wet," you know, all those corny things like that. And, "Hey, Tom, you know, stick out your tongue so you look like a, you know, you turn around sideways, you look like a zipper," and all this kind of crazy stuff like that, you know, all that corny stuff that you do in the eighth and ninth grade. And so Tom was really, he was kind of shy about all that and really kind of felt badly about it. But you know, he was really an amazing guy, because he was not only skinny, but he's extremely uncoordinated. And if you've ever seen a guy like that, especially on the basketball court like out here, you know, we'd always make fun of him, because he'd run up and down the court and he was always falling and tripping and everything, and we'd say, "Tom, watch out for the lines, buddy, watch out for the lines, don't trip over the lines," you know, and because he was always just tripping and falling. Every time he'd come to one, he'd have to kind of jump over with those big feet of his. And so everything that old Tom did was just completely awkward, completely gawky, and completely just uncoordinated. And so this was about the ninth grade, and Tom, the interesting thing about Tom, he really loved basketball. And even though he was gawky and awkward, uncoordinated in practice, man, he practiced hard. And when we played in practice, he played his heart out. And when we played the games, he sat his rear out and all kinds of stuff like that, you know. But he was really involved in the thing. I mean, he really loved basketball. He ate basketball, slept basketball, played basketball. I mean, his whole life revolved around basketball. That's what he wanted for his life. He wanted to be a good basketball player. He really desired it. And he spent most of those 3 years just playing basketball, from the time we were in the ninth grade till about the time we were in the 11th grade. And then in the summer of the 11th grade, something happened. Something happened. And what happened was that all of a sudden Tom began to fill out. He got a little muscles. You know, he went from about 85 pounds to about 185 or 190 pounds. He was still about 6'5". I mean, he just really began to fill out and be a big guy. And instead of being so gawky and uncoordinated, suddenly he began to really be able to move, and his feet didn't seem to be quite so big anymore, and he began to move around the court. And in that year, between the time he was a junior and a senior, he moved from being a gawky, spastic, uncoordinated basketball player to being an all-conference basketball player. And, you know, as I look back on that, I began to think, you know, now what was the one reason that was behind that, besides just the fact that he just grew up? The reason he really became the kind of basketball player that he was his senior year was because all those years from the 9th to the 12th grade, when everything was going poor and everybody was making jokes about him and everybody was laughing about him every time he'd fall down, you know, and people from the crowd would just, you know, they'd throw stuff at him and everything, you know. All that time, there was one thing about Tom, and that was he had one goal for his life. One goal. And the one goal that he had was to play basketball. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to play basketball. And you know, as I look at the life of Peter, and we want to look at that in just a minute, but as I look at the life of Peter, I see that Peter had one goal in his life. One goal. And that was Jesus. To seek Jesus. That was the only goal he had in his life. And you know, as I look at my life and really consider who I am, I really want that. I really want the one goal of my life to be to seek Jesus and to know him and to love him like he really wants me to. So I want us this morning just to take a little bit of time and look at the life of Peter. And if you want to, you can get out your Bible. I'm not sure whether you can follow this. We're going to be jumping all over to our text this morning. It's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And now I'm going to read all four of those to you. No, I won't do that to you. But what we want to do this morning is we want to just look at the life of Peter and kind of trace his life through the four Gospels and just see what happened to him. What happened to him as he lived his life out, and how he really began to progress so that his goal was established in his mind, and he began to focus more and more on Jesus in his life. The first thing we see about Peter is, and you'll be able to remember this real sermonic form so you can remember it. Any of you teach preaching up there, you'll be proud of me. The first thing that happened was that Peter comes to Jesus. Peter comes to Jesus. Now, Peter had been called by Jesus from a fishing boat and with his buddies James and John and Andrew, his brother, and they had been called off a fishing boat. And Peter, in his life, was a big, strong fisherman. And he'd spent his life being a fisherman. And he knew everything about the fishing business. Most of his life had been spent on a stinking fishing boat, you know. You've been on a fishing boat, you know it stinks. And Peter lived his life out like that. And he was just like a sailor. He cussed like a sailor, you know. Probably he and Jesus were going around the countryside after this, and he'd say, "Well, bleep, Jesus, I don't believe we ought to do it this way." And he'd go around with Jesus talking, you know, just being the sailor. And probably smelled like a sailor, you know. And he was big and strong like a sailor, and spent his time out in the sun, and he was like a sailor in everything that he did. And so this big, strong fisherman was called by Jesus, and he comes to Jesus, and he has a lot of flaws in his personality. And you begin to see this right off as you begin to read about Peter through the New Testament. You begin to see that there are all kind of things that were wrong with him. The first thing that was wrong with him was that he was impulsive. He had a tremendous ability take that size 12 shoe, I suppose it was a size 12 shoe that he wore, and stick it right square in the middle of his mouth, and had a hard time getting it out. That was one flaw in his personality. Not only that, not only was he really impulsive, but he was also just a little bit thick. You know, he didn't quite have it all. You know, he was a little slow learning. Let's just put it that way. He's a little slow at learning. He was kind of like a guy that played basketball at Davidson with me, and he was Coach Lefty Drizel always had trouble with him because he was always into some kind of trouble. He was a little slow learning, and he also had a drinking problem. Now, I'm not sure Peter had a drinking problem, but he was a little slow learning. So this guy that played basketball at Davidson with me, here he was. He was always slow. The coach never could teach him. A great basketball player, but he's just a little slow, and he had this drinking problem. So the coach Drizel, called him in one day, and it had come to a real crisis point because he was going to get kicked out of school, and his grades weren't doing too good, and all this kind of stuff. And so he was going to finally show him once and for all, he was going to show, we'll call him Bronco. That's a good name. Not his real name, but that's the name. He's just going to show him once and for all what the situation was. And so he decided that Coach Drizel decided that he had this one plan that he was going to show him, and that this was going to work. And if this didn't work, then nothing would work. And so he called old Bronco in, and he says, "Bronco, I want you to sit down right over here." And so he told him to sit down. He sat down over there, and when he sat down, he says, "Okay, now I want to show you an experiment, and I really want you to get the point. You've been having trouble with drinking. You're a little slow. You can't really catch things very good, but I think you'll be able to see this very, very clearly." And so he says, "Bronco, I've got two glasses here, and one glass over here has got water in it." He says, "Now look," he says, "I want you to see this thing." He says, "See this water?" Bronco says, "Duh, yeah, coach, I see the water, you know, it's just right there." Okay, so he's got that. And he says, "Bronco, now do you see this worm?" And he holds up this big old long stringy night worm, and night crawler, and he says, "Do you see this worm?" He says, "Duh, yeah, coach, I see the worm. See the worm? The worm's right there." He says, "Okay, now, Bronco," he says, "I want you to watch me. Watch what I do." He says, "You see the water and you see the worm. Now I want you to watch what happens." And he sticks the worm down in the water and he pulls him out. He says, "Bronco, what happened?" Bronco brilliantly replies, "Nothing, coach, nothing happens." And so he says, "Okay, now I want you to see over here in the other glass." The other glass had beer in it. He says, "Now, Bronco, what's in this glass?" And Bronco says, "Duh, coach, beer, you know, and he gets all excited about that because of his habit there. And so he says, "Okay, you see the worm?" And he says, "You see the glass?" He says, "Yeah." So he says, "Okay, now watch." He says, "I'm going to put this worm down the beer." And he puts the worm down the beer, and the worm, half that worm just dissolves. I mean, it just goes away. And the coach pulls the rest of the worm out of the water. He says, "Now, Bronco," he says, "I want you to see this experiment. I want you to observe it very closely." He says, "I want you to come to the conclusion." He says, "What possible conclusion could come to? What is the only possible conclusion you could come to about this so that you can see it, so that you'll have it and everything?" He says, "I want you to tell me what conclusion you've come to." And Bronco thinks for just a second, you know, really slow, scratches his head. And all of a sudden, the light turns on. And he says, "Duh, coach," he says, "if you drink beer, you won't get worms." So, that's what he said. So, now, y'all caught that. You'll think about it. You'll be on it here in a minute. So, that's kind of the way Peter was. Peter was a lot like that. Really, he was a lot like that. Because he was just a little slow learner. And not only that, but he was a total failure. As you read through the New Testament, you read through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you see that Peter was a total failure in everything that he did. Never once did he ever do anything right. That ever turned out exactly right. And so as we begin to see his personality, it all begins to be summed up in this one place, in this one spot, right there where he walked on the water with Jesus, or attempted to walk on the water with Jesus. And we begin to see the picture of this. It's early in the morning, it's dark, and there was a guy up on the watch, and there was a storm coming in, you know, and the storm was there, and the lightning was flashing, the thunder was rolling, the waves were smashing against the side of the boat, and Peter and the other disciples were asleep down here in the boat, and suddenly the guy up in the watch says, "It's a ghost! It's a ghost! Wake up down there! It's a ghost!" And he looks out on the water, and there's a ghost out there, or something that appears to be a ghost. And all the guys get up and they lean over the side of the boat and they peer out there to see if it's a ghost out there. And they say, "Listen, man, it does. It looks like a ghost. It looks like a ghost." And then a voice comes out from off the water and says, "Don't be afraid. It's me. It's Jesus." And the disciples turn to each other and say, "Man, who's he trying to kid? You know, I mean, there's a ghost out there. It looks like a ghost." And so, so Peter, at that point in the drama here, Peter steps forward. Peter, being always having to be the big cheese leader, Peter steps forward. And as he steps forward, he says to he yells out there to the ghost or to Jesus or whoever's out there. He says, "Hey, Jesus, if that's you, just tell me to come on out to the water." He says, turns around to the disciples who are behind and says, "Listen, man, don't sweat it. Jesus is no dummy. If it's Jesus, he wouldn't ask me to come out there on the water. And besides, if it's a ghost, no ghost is going to ask me to come out there on the water. So just keep cool. Peter's got everything under control, so just don't worry about it." And so what happens is, Peter thinks he's got everything under control, and all of a sudden, a voice comes out from off the water. It says, "Hey, Peter, come on. Come on out on the water to me." And suddenly there's this huge lump that forms right here in Peter's throat, and this great big knot that gets in his stomach, and he begins to realize that, man, he's stuck it in again, and he's really in trouble. And he begins to look at the disciples behind him, and he knows that, you know, that they really want him to get out there on the water, you know, and see what he can do. And he knows that he's already stuck it in his mouth with Jesus. Jesus wants him to come out there. So he says, "Now look," he says, "let's see if we can't figure out some way around this." And so Peter just kind of begins to stall for time and talks about some things. And then several disciples say, "Come on, Peter, go ahead, man, you can do it. You can do it." They know he couldn't do it. But they said, Peter, you go ahead and do it. And so he begins to stall for a little more time. He begins to take his jacket off, you know, just slowly unbuttoning. Finally, he gets his jacket off and he realizes, man, he doesn't have any more time. He doesn't have any choice. He's going to have to go out there on the water. And so he looks around him, and there the lightning is flashing, the thunder is rolling, the waves are beating against the side of the boat, and Peter goes over to the side of the boat, and with all the courage he can muster, he puts one foot out over the side of the boat. And he just kind of does like that to test it, see if it's really liquid, you know. I mean, he's dived in it, see if it's maybe turned to solid since the last time he's in it. You know, he's dived in it about 8 million times, and he's swam in it, whatever you say, he's been in it hundreds and hundreds of times, and he's fished in it time after time after time, and he's been in, you know, he's spent his whole life around the water, but he hopes that in all the times he spent around the water when it was liquid, that since the last time he checked it out, he hopes that maybe it's turned solid. But he tries and it's not, and he begins to realize, and his foot goes down the water, and he leans over the side of the boat, and he reaches around the other side, and he puts his other foot down the water, and he's holding on there, and he looks back at the disciples, and one of the disciples says, Peter, I've heard that the water is really nice this time of night. We'll see you later. And so Peter's standing there looking at the disciples, and he looks out at Jesus, and all of a sudden he turns around and he begins to go. And he begins to walk. He takes one step. He takes two steps, three steps, four steps, five steps. And he's actually getting out there on the water. And he's beginning to move out there where he sees Jesus, and he begins to walk out there. And you know, you get the whole picture. The lightning's still flashing, the thunder's still rolling, the waves are still coming. But Peter's walking, and you can know the thrill and excitement that he's experiencing if you've ever been water skiing. Because if you've ever, the first time you've ever been water skiing, you know, how many of you have ever water skied? You water skied, most everybody in here. And so what happens is when you go water skiing, boy, you think, man, I'll never get up, and you pull along, and finally after about four or five spills, you finally get up. And you're going along, and you look down at yourself, and you say, man, am I cool. This is really fantastic. I'm actually going across the water. And that's bound to have been the sensation that Peter had. Peter was saying, all of a sudden he was walking, he looks down at himself and says, man, am I cool. Jesus is really going to be proud of me. And he says, I'm walking across the water. And about that time, this big light, flash of lightning comes across, the thunder rolls, and a wave comes up and slashes against the side of Peter's leg. And he begins to go. Begins to fall, and he goes down the water, and he can only say one thing. He says, Jesus, Lord, save me. And so Jesus comes over there and pulls him up out of the water by the hair and drags him along, half drowning, swallowing water. He drags him along and throws him over the side of the boat by the hair. Is that what he does? No. Jesus lifts him up out of the water and puts his arm around him, and they walk back to the boat together. Now look, Peter couldn't walk on the water. I mean, he was totally inadequate to walk on the water, wasn't he? I mean, he really couldn't do it, even though he made a feeble attempt to go four or five steps, and he really stepped out on faith. Basically, Peter could not walk on the water. He was inadequate. And you know, when I look at my life, I begin to realize that I'm really inadequate. I've been doing some real assessment of my own personality these last few months, and I begin to realize some things about me. I begin to realize that there are a lot of inadequacies in my life. One of the ones that's in my life is the fact that I'm insecure so many times. You know, I want people to like me. I want people to approve of me. I want to be a success. I've always gotten things by attainment, success, and recognition. And so I just kind of reach my life out there and try to, you know, put myself forward so that I can gain approval and success and recognition. And that way I won't be insecure, and that way people will really like me. Well, that's a real flaw in my personality. And maybe there are a lot of you, boy, in your life right now, you're saying, you know, some things are happening at school or at your church or at home or something, and you're saying, man, you know, I feel so inadequate. I feel so inferior. I'm always comparing myself to other people. I'm always, you know, I really don't like myself. And you really wonder, what in the world about your life is really making any sense? You sense that you're really inadequate. And you know that's the way Peter felt. He saw all these flaws in his personality. As he began to be with Jesus more and more, he began to see more and more of these flaws in his personality. And you know, I think it's probably good that you see the flaws in your personality and begin to realize that you really are inadequate. But you know, the one thing about Peter, with all these flaws, with everything that was wrong with his personality, that everything that was going on in his personality at that particular time, with all the problems he was having in his own personal life and the things that were wrong with him, he had one thing that he was doing. in that particular story, and that was that he was headed for Jesus. I mean, that was more than the other disciples were doing, wasn't it? Peter was headed for Jesus. I mean, he was really seeking to be what Jesus wanted him to be. And you know, if you'll do that in your life, you know, I don't know what the inadequacies are in your life, but boy, if you'll just be headed for Jesus in your life, then God will do tremendous things in your life as we begin to see more and more in the life of Peter. The second point here is not only does Peter come to Jesus, but he confesses Jesus. And you remember the story over a couple chapters later from Matthew 13 over to about Matthew 15 or 14, 16, somewhere around in there. And what happens is that Peter and Jesus and all the disciples had been together, and people started harassing him. I mean, they were really harassing him. They were giving him all kinds of grief about a lot of different things. And the Pharisees were attacking him and really getting him. And they wanted to get rid of Jesus. And all this was beginning to happen. And so Jesus decided to have a retreat. And he called his disciples off, and they got together over here on this side of a mountain somewhere and out someplace. And they got away from everybody else. And Jesus just asked his disciples a really important. He said, men, he says, who are people saying I am? And one of them says, well, some people are saying that you're Moses. And another one says, some people are saying that you're Elijah. And some people are saying that you're Jeremiah or one of the other prophets. Some people are saying you're John the Baptist. And then Jesus stopped and things got real quiet. And he said, and who do you say that I am? And things were really quiet for a few minutes. Nobody seemed to really know the answer to that. And then Peter pops up and he says, just like the light turns on, he says, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus turns to him and says, Peter, he says, you know something? He said, you're right. You're right. I am the Christ, the Son of the living God, and that was revealed to you not by some human source or not by some your own logical thinking, but it was revealed to you by God himself. And God himself showed that to you. And because of your answer, he said, I'm going to build my church on you. And I'm going to make you the rock. And you're going to hold the keys of the kingdom. And hell shall not prevail against the church. And he says, Peter, man, listen. He says, I want you to realize something. Man, this is great, the answer you've given. This is really exciting, the answer that you've given to me. And you can imagine Peter's excitement. I mean, you can see yourself in that situation, kind of a classroom situation, you know, in one of the classes you're in. It's a really hard class, and the teacher's always asking all these hard questions. And she comes in one morning and asks a question, and everybody ventures all these different answers. And she says, no, that's not right. And then finally, you raise your hand, and you think you might have the right answer. And you raise your hand, and you give her the answer, and she says, that's right. That's right. And boy, the whole class looks at you and says in amazement, boy, isn't he smart or isn't she smart? Boy, isn't this great? And that's the way Peter felt. I mean, he was excited. He was, you know, the other disciples really looked at him, and they weren't sure about old Peter, but they began to realize that Peter, you know, really wasn't quite as dumb as everybody thought he was, and that he really did have an exciting answer. And Peter was excited for himself. You know, I'm the rock. Jesus is going to build his church on me. On me. Then Jesus says to his disciples, he says, okay, men, he says, I'll tell you what's going to happen. Now that you've discovered this, he says, I'm going to Jerusalem. When I get to Jerusalem, he says, I'm going to suffer, be persecuted, and I'm going to die. But he said, don't sweat it, because 3 days later, I'm going to be raised from the dead. And so Jesus tells his disciples what's going to happen. And they all sit there kind of in amazement. And then Peter says, hey, Jesus, hey, come over here. Just a minute. Come on over here. And so they go out and they go over to the side. And Peter says, now listen, Jesus. He said, now you're going to build your church on me, right? Right. And you know, the keys of the kingdom are mine. Right. And he says, okay, now listen. He says, here's what I want you to understand. He says, I want you to understand, Jesus, that I know what you're talking about. I know that you're talking about spiritual things. I know that you're really not going to go to Jerusalem and suffer and die. I know that all these things really aren't going to happen to you. I just want you to understand what is going to happen. I just want you to know that I understand that you're talking about spiritual things. Now, the boys over here, they don't really understand it. They think you're going to go to Jerusalem and die. But I want you to know that I really understand. I really understand. And at that point, Jesus turns on Peter and he says, Peter, get behind me, you Satan. And all of a sudden, what's happened is Peter's gone from a fantastically high spiritual experience to the pit, man. He's in the lowest of the low. You ever live your life like that? I mean, most of the high school and college students that I know live their lives just like that. From the highest high to the lowest, I mean, from one minute to the next minute, Peter had gone from the highest spiritual high that it could possibly be experienced to the lowest low that you could possibly experience. I mean, you know, from being having the keys of the kingdom to be calling Satan, that's pretty high, pretty low, wouldn't you say? And so Peter's really, you know, I mean, he's really kind of a, you know, he's really up and down in the thing. And a lot of you live your lives just like that, up and down, up and down, up and down. Got a lot of you girls, you know, I mean, 1 week you're really excited, and you come to a conference like this and you really get excited, and then 2 weeks later, I mean, you're down in the pit of depression and you go on a 6-day cry. Isn't that right? Or you guys, you come and you get wee willy goosebumps at a place like this or some conference or camp or something like that, and then from two weeks to 6 months later, I mean, you're in the pit. And you say, man, that's the way I live my life, and you can't figure out why you live your life like that. You're a lot of you're just like the Great American Scream Machine there in Atlanta at Six Flags Over Georgia. You know, the thing goes up and it goes straight down. Boy, it's really, you know, it's kind of a wild deal. And you get up to a high, and then boy, your stomach just drops out as you go shoot right down. And that's the way a lot of you live your life. Had a friend of mine call me last week, goes to Carson Newman College. Well, I got a letter from him about a week before, and he had written me about all the things that God was doing in his life. Man, he was really excited. The Lord's doing this. The Lord's doing that. I'm really growing. I'm really maturing, you know, everything, all this, and I'm really having a chance to minister, and all, on and on and on and on. And then about 3 days after I got his letter, he called me on the phone. I said, Hal, man, it was great to hear from you. It's great to know that you're really doing so well. And he said, Barry, I'm not doing real well. He said, man, it's been awful. He says, his last few days just been terrible. He says, I'm really depressed. He says, I'm worthless. He says, this is awful. He says, I'm in the pit. And man, I couldn't believe, you know, here one, just a week before, I mean, he'd been up here, and the next week he's just down here. And yet it seems to me that most people are really living their lives like that, and most of you are living your life like that, aren't you? Yeah. And you say, man, what can I do about it? What can I do? And I think Jesus really gives us a solution to that over in Matthew. The 17th, 16th chapter, and at the second part of the 23rd verse, here's what he says. When Peter had said that, he'd said that about being Satan. He says, you are thinking merely from men's point of view and not from God's. In other words, you got your eyes on men, Peter, and you don't have your eyes on God. And then he says, in the next verse, he says, then Jesus said to the disciples, if anyone wants to be a follower of mine, let him deny himself. Take up his cross and follow the church. Follow the ministry. Follow missions. Follow the seminary. Now, what does he say? Follow me. 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 And isn't that the solution? Man, you're living your life up and down, up and down, up and down. And you've confessed Jesus as the Christ, but your life seems to go up and down. And Jesus says, right here is the solution. Keep your eyes on me, Peter. Keep your eyes on me. Follow me. Seek me. And the whole clue to the Christian life is to seek him. Now let's look at a couple of other things. Another thing that's really important here is that Peter gets close to Jesus over in Matthew the 17th chapter. He gets close to Jesus. Now this is really one of the weird things about Peter is you'd think he would learn by now. You'd think he would have learned. I mean, he would have learned a few things, but he's not learning very many things. Because here at the Mount of Transfiguration, Peter has a chance to be really close to Jesus. I mean, really close. And so what happens is, he and James and John, just the three of them, the inner core of the disciples, get a chance to go with Jesus up on the Mount of Transfiguration. And there they are, and suddenly, Jesus turns to a dazzling white. And it's like the sun is just shining on him there in the night. And his robe just turns a sparkling white. And there's Moses on one side and Elijah on the other side. And there they are, all three of them together. And man, it's one of the great times of probably all of the history of Christianity, one of the great times in the New Testament is when Jesus is being transfigured there and his body, I'm not sure what all it means, but one thing it means is his body's being transformed into a kind of a spiritual body. And Peter's there to observe it. He's there to watch it. And so what happens? Peter's always having to come to God on his own terms. Come to Jesus on his own terms. And so he says, psst, 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 James and John, look up there. There's Peter, there's Jesus, there's Elijah, and there's Moses. Look up there at those guys. Wouldn't it be great if we could build three shelters up here and stay up here forever? And so he says, psst, James, John, hey, listen, Jesus, do you think that's a good idea? And so he says, now look, James and John, here's what we're going to do. We're going to build three shelters up here, and you're going to build one, I'm going to build one, and you two guys are going to, and John, you're going to build one, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to go get the pegs, we're going to go get the rope, we're going to go get the lumber and the nails, and we're going to go and we're going to build this thing, and boy, Jesus is really going to be proud of us because we built this thing. Now, Jesus, Moses, and Elijah needed three shelters like they needed a hole in the head. I mean, they needed three shelters like my wife needs another husband. I mean, there's just no market for one. I mean, they just didn't need it. Just didn't need it. No need. But here's Peter. He says, hey, man, let's go. Let's go build it. Let's go do something. Always trying to come to God on his own terms. Always trying to come on his own. You'd think he would learn, but he's never learned. And you'd think we'd learn, but we're slow to learn, aren't we? We're slow to learn. And here he is, Peter and James and John, and they're there at the Mount of Transfiguration, this fantastic spiritual experience. And Peter blows it again. He blows it again. Now look, we're like that, aren't we? We feel like we have to come to God on our own terms. I mean, the whole Southern Baptist Convention thinks they have to come to God on their own terms, don't they? I mean, the whole deal is that if you get in the right position and you get in the right church and you have the right place, then you're going to be close to Jesus. And then you'll really be recognized to him, and then Jesus will really be proud of you. Isn't that right? That's what people think. That's what most ministers think. That's what a lot of people really, really feel at Southern Baptist. At Southern Baptist, so many people feel like, boy, you know, if I just work hard, boy, get saved. Now, this is what we preach. We say, get saved, and when you come into the church, then, boy, You can get to work. You can get in these activities, and we'll put you in WMU and Brotherhood and Sunday School and Training Union and 8,000 other things and 40 committees and all this stuff. And then, boy, you'll really be a good Christian, and you'll really be close to Jesus. Isn't that right? That's what we say. And we may not verbally say it, but that's what we say by our actions. That's what really counts, isn't it? Or maybe you're saying to yourself, you're saying, man, you know, Jesus, look, I really want to love you, I'm going to obey you, and I'm going to keep your commandments. If it kills me, I'm going to keep your commandments. And it'll kill you. And so we say all these things. And it's almost like we're taking that verse where Jesus said, all you that are weary and heavy laden. You know that verse? It's almost like we're saying, all you that are weary and heavy laden, come unto me. And I'll really put you to work. Isn't that right? That's not what God intends. He doesn't intend for us to come to him on our own terms. But Jesus, just with his great love, just wants us to be close to him. And he just wants to love us. And he just wants us to crawl up in his lap and sit with him. And well, you know, when I crawl up in his lap and just sit with him, and he just really, you know, allow him to just really love me and allow me to just really be close to him. He allows me to be close to him and to just be with him. Boy, I am so motivated. I mean, you know, I am motivated to keep his commandments. I want to do that. I have a real desire to. So what Jesus is really saying here is, listen, Peter, just be close to me. That's what he wanted on the Mount of Transfiguration. He just wanted Peter to be close to him. But Peter has to blow it, and he tries to come to God on his own terms. How many times do you try to come to God on your own terms? I mean, you think of all these things that you're going to do for Jesus. I mean, why do you do your BSU activities? Why do you do them? Why? I mean, why do you read your Bible? I mean, why do you even pray? Why do you work in the church? Why do you try to be religious? Why do you try to do all these things? Well, when you begin to ask yourself all these questions, you know that I've asked myself. So many times I come to the conclusion, well, I'm trying to do those things because I want to come to God on my own terms. That's not what he wants. He just wants me to be close to him and let him love me as I seek him out. Now, one or two other things about Peter, then we'll be through. Another thing that's really important here is not only does Peter come to Jesus, not only does he confess Jesus, not only is he close to Jesus, but Peter finally cooperates with Jesus. We begin to see that over in Matthew, the 17th chapter, or the 18th chapter, so excuse me, over in John 13, where the disciples are there together, and it's close to the end of Jesus' ministry, and there they are, and as they're there together with Jesus, Jesus begins to go around, and he takes their dirty old stinking rotten feet. They take their shoes and sandals off, and he begins to wash each one of their feet. What a humiliating thing for Jesus to do. And he goes all the way around, and all this time, big Peter's there. Big old proud Peter, you know. And finally they get to the place where Peter is the only one left. And Peter says, Jesus, he says, I want you to understand something. I want you to get it clear. He says, I understand who you are. I know you're the Son of God. And I just want you to realize that because you're the Son of God, you're not going to wash my feet. You're not going to wash my feet. No way. He says, now these other inconsiderate, spiritually dull, senseless, insolent, ridiculous, stupid boobs may let you wash their feet, but you're not going to wash my feet. I just want you to understand. And then Jesus says to him, Peter, if I don't wash your feet, then you don't have any part. Well, Peter had pride. Didn't he have pride? Isn't that what it was that kept him from letting Jesus wash his feet? I mean, he had pride. I mean, he was so proud. He didn't want Jesus to... I mean, if you've ever had your feet washed, if you've ever been a foot washing service, you know it's very humbling. And man, if it's Jesus there washing your feet, you know how humbling it would be. And Peter was so proud and so prideful that he didn't want Jesus washing his feet. I mean, he didn't want any part of that. Because it destroyed his pride. Well, I guess there's one thing that eats my lunch is pride. Pride and selfishness just chew me up. I always like to be right. I think most guys always like to be. Always have to feel like, boy, you know, I'm right. I'm right. I'm right. You're wrong and I'm right. If it comes right out, you're wrong and I'm right. And it's really difficult for me to say, boy, I'm wrong. And it's really hard for me to say, man, I'm just not cutting the mustard. Or my past is screwed up. It's hard for me to say that. It's hard for you to say that. You know, it's like my wife. She'll come in and you know, one day I'll be kind of touchy and harsh. And she'll say, boy, you sure are touchy and harsh today. And I'll say, I am not! You know, I just can't be wrong. And a lot of us are like that, aren't we? I mean, our pride just really gets to us. And we really think that we can't be wrong. And a lot of us in here this morning, we're so prideful that we can't come to Jesus and just really lay things out before him and let him wash our feet and say to him, Jesus, well, here it is. Here it is. Here's the sin in my life. And a lot of you, boy, you've never really admitted the sin in your life. Oh, you know, if somebody asked you, are you a sinner? You'd say, yeah, the Bible tells me I'm a sinner. But you've never really admitted the fact that you're really sinful in your life and done some things about the sin in your life. And there are a lot of you here this morning who, boy, you've got grudges against people and grudges in relationships, and you've never done anything about those because of your pride. And there's some of you here this morning who've you're holding things against parents, you're holding things against brothers and sisters, you're holding things against mom and dad. I mean, you really don't get along with your mom and dad. Maybe some of you that are married, boy, you got in-law problems. And it's just sheer pride that's keeping you from admitting that that's really true and then doing something about it. But let me tell you something. Peter had pride. But he came to the place in this particular story where he submitted and he gave in and he allowed Jesus to wash his feet. What if you'll just admit the pride in your life? You just admit all those things in your life and just allow God to really begin to do something in your life with those things. He'll really begin to change and make you different. And as you begin to cooperate with Jesus and continue to seek him in your life, then you begin to realize, boy, that God really has something in store for you. Now, let's go to the last thing. This is the most important one of all. Peter not only does all these other things that he's done all along, but as we come to this place, we find that Peter becomes contrite and broken before Jesus. He becomes contrite and broken before Jesus. What happened? You know, Peter had been seeking Jesus all along. He'd been going with him. Boy, it was great. It's going great guns. And they were going along, and Peter was learning a lot about himself and Jesus, you know, and he was seeking Jesus in his life. And then they come to the place of the cross. And Jesus was arrested. And Peter was still seeking after him, still following after him. And there in the courtyard where he could look up and see Jesus, a little seventh grade girl gets his goat. Hey man, aren't you one of the ones that was with Jesus? No. That happens three times with three different people. And the Bible says that Peter, at that point, after that, he denied Jesus the third time, says he went out and he cried bitterly. What do you think that means? That really simply means that Peter became a broken man. And he began to realize, as the events began to proceed, and Jesus was nailed to that cross, began to see. Peter began to see that it was his sin that nailed Jesus to the cross. It was his sin that nailed Jesus to the cross. What about you? Boy, have you ever admitted the fact? I'm not talking about people here who are non-Christians. When I'm talking to Christians, have you ever really realized the fact that it's your sin that nailed Jesus to the cross? Well, I tell you, that's a hard thing to come to. Now, Jesus nailed the cross. Roman Jews, they nailed him to the cross, right? Right, right. But it was your sin and my sin that nailed him to the cross. It was our sin that nailed him to the cross. It was Peter's sin that nailed him. It was my sin. Have you ever wondered, and you know, here we are right here at the heart of everything that's going on with Peter and his whole life and where his whole life's going to be changed. And have you ever wondered why Judas killed himself and Peter didn't? I mean, they did the same thing, didn't they? You ever ask yourself that question? Why did Peter not kill himself, and why did Judas kill himself? You know, I begin to ponder on that question. Why is that? One reason, because Peter continued to seek Jesus and have hope in him, and Judas quit looking to Jesus for his source of strength. And so Judas killed himself. And Peter really began to find life. For Judas, the cross meant death. For Peter, the cross meant life. Why? Because Peter continued to seek after Jesus, even in his denial. I mean, after the resurrection, who was the first man to the tomb? Peter. After the resurrection, who was the first man to the shore that morning when Jesus was over on the shore? Peter. He jumped off and he swam over there and he got onto the shore to be with Jesus. He was seeking after him. He continued to do that. Judas quit. Now, Peter became a broken man. Peter realized that it was his sin that nailed Jesus to the cross. And you know, it's very hard for me to admit, because I don't like to admit that I'm wrong. But it's my sin that's nailed Jesus to the cross. I began to realize this about 2 years ago. I've been a Christian for about 10 years, but only a couple years ago that I began to realize that it was my sin that nailed Jesus to the cross. And I became a broken man because of that, just like Peter did. I began to realize, you know, in my own ministries, I was sharing some yesterday, that there was real frustration in it, and that there was real... no real success in it, that there was no real happiness for me in it. Boy, I was really disillusioned with everything that was going on around me in Southern Baptist churches and just within myself and my family, and it seemed like everything was just going all wrong. And I began to really ask myself, you know, man, what is the problem? And I finally came to the conclusion last about October a year and a half ago, I began to realize some things about my life. And I began to realize it was me that nailed Jesus to the cross. I began to realize it was my sin that did that. I began to realize that there were all kinds of things. I guess I never really admitted that I was wrong about anything. But I began to realize, boy, that in my life, boy, there was lust, and there was greed, and there was cheating, and there were wrong relationships, and there were bad attitudes and improper response to God, and all these things, boy, were just wrong in my life. Wrong! And I had to come to the place where I'd admitted those things. Not just kind of in a, you know, kind of flippant way confessing them to God, but just realizing who I was, who I really was before Jesus. As I began to realize that, I was the one who nailed him to the cross. Yet I think God only led me to the place where I could really realize that and realize that I was like him because I continued to seek him. I believe the reason Peter could come to that conclusion was because Peter continued to seek Jesus. Now, I really want you to see the key here. This is where we're going to close it out. Here's what I want you to see. That morning, there on the shore, Peter and Jesus were there. The other disciples were around, but Peter and Jesus were there in a conversation by themselves. And if you can catch the intensity of it and the warmth and the tenderheartedness of it, catch it, because here's what it was. Jesus said to Peter, "Peter, you love me?" Peter said, "Yes." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep." Jesus said, "Peter, do you really love me?" "Yes. Feed my sheep." It comes to a third time. Maybe for the three times Peter denied Jesus, he comes to him for the third time. He says, "Peter, are you really my friend? Do you really love me?" Peter, the Bible says Peter was grieved in his heart. He said, "Jesus, you know my heart. You know I love you." Jesus says to him, "Feed my sheep." Now, Peter had one motive in his life. All the other motives had been cleared out. His one motive was what? Very simple. Boy, to know, to seek, to love Jesus, to keep his eyes on Jesus. That was his whole motive for life. That was his whole motive for life, just to keep his eyes on Jesus. And Peter says, Jesus says, "Feed my sheep." What does he mean? Does he mean, "Okay, now Peter, now that you really love me, get to work out there and start feeding all my sheep"? Is that what he means? No. Here's what he means. He means, "Peter, do you love me?" And Peter, "Yes, you know my heart. Boy, my motives are right. I love you, and that you're the one thing I'm seeking, the one thing I want to know, the one thing in my life. You're the one person. You're all to me, Jesus. Everything. You are my total motive for living." And Peter, out of the overflowing love of my love in your life, out of that overflowing motive, out of that overflowing seeking of you in my life, out of the overflow of all that, then Peter, you're going to be able to feed my sheep, and you won't even have to work at it. You'll be able to feed my sheep. You won't have to try to kill yourself to obey me. But you can just feed my sheep, because the one motive of your life is me. Me. I got a little boy. His name is Scott. And Scott has a lot of things wrong with him. Already I can see that. He's got a fiery temper. And he gets mad and lays down the floor and just yells and screams. He's two. He just turned two last week. He's in the terrible twos. It's really exciting. And he's got a temper. And he's got these ear infections that he gets all the time. He's costing me a lot of money. Haven't taken him to the doctor and get his ears fixed. He'd probably have to have an operation on his ears, so that the fluid will drain out and he won't have those infections and everything. It's cost me a lot. And by last week, he's got his pigeon toe like that, And he runs like that. He just kind of waddles, like that. And so we took him to the doctor last week, and the doctor said, "You'll have to put a bar on his feet." So every night now, he sleeps with a bar on his feet, and he looks like he's, traction or something like that, and so he sleeps like that every night. He's got pigeon toed, and he does a lot of things wrong. He messes up his pants a lot, and we would try going through this whole toilet training bit, and he has real difficulty with that. He says he'll come in, he'll say, "Daddy, wet, daddy, wet," he'll say, Scott made a boo-boo, he realized that there's some things wrong with him, but it's real interesting. With all those things wrong with him, he comes, when I come in this afternoon to our house, or every day I come home from work or from wherever I am, and I come into the house, boy, he comes flying around the corner there, just kind of winging his way around, flopping through the house to come to the door to old dad. And when I get there, I bend down, and he puts his arms around me. He just hugs me, and I just hug him, and he just kisses me, and he'll go like this, or sometimes he'll go like that, and he'll kiss me, and sometimes he just likes to lick me, and a lot of times, you know, he'll just come, and we'll be sitting around the house, and I'll be sitting in his chair, and he'll come up to me, and he'll just start jerking at my pants, and he'll say, "Daddy, laugh, sit, Daddy, I want to sit," and I'll pull him up in my lap, and he'll just put his arms around me and just hug me, and he'll just kind of kiss on me and hug me, and sometimes he'll just feel my face like that, you know. He'll say, "I love you, Daddy, I love you." Well, let me tell you something. That's exciting. I'm his dad, and I love him with all my heart. And boy, when he comes to me and he tells me, "Boy, I love you, Daddy, I love you," I just really get fired up, because I know that he enjoys being with me. And when he says, "Daddy, sit down, Daddy, down here, Daddy, sit down here," airport. He wants to play at this new airport he got for his birthday. So we'll sit down there, you know, and he'll play at this little man. And he'll just lean up against me. Boy, it's just really neat. Really neat to know that one of the great, probably the greatest joy in his life is to be with his dad. Peter, with all of his problems, pride, coming to God on his own terms, always sticking his foot in his mouth, being impulsive, trying to be a leader but being a failure, everything about him, even denying Jesus. Boy, he was coming to Jesus and he said, "Jesus, I love you." Just like my little boy says to me, "Daddy, I love you." Well, I think that's what Jesus wants us to say, isn't it? That's what he wants. That's what he wants out of me. It's what he wants out of me. He wants me to say, "Barry," he wants to say to me, "Barry, I love you." And he wants me to say back to him, "Jesus, I love you. And you're my whole motive for life. You're my whole goal in life. You're everything that I am." Well, that's what the ministry is. Because when you got that part down, you begin to grow in that. And the rest of it all begins to fall into place. God will use you. Because you're so in tune and so sensitive to him. But you're just seeking him out and sensitive to him day by day. Well, my prayer for you is, as you leave this place, most of you are preparing for the ministry or something in the ministry that you want to do. Well, my prayer for you is that if nothing else ever happens in your life, but you'll seek Jesus. Because as you seek him, then he'll allow you to feed his sheep. Let's just have a word of prayer together. Father, we thank you for this time together. A lot of us are sitting here, we're cold. We have a lot of things on our mind, like getting back, all this kind of thing, but we just kind of pause right now to come to you and say, "Lord, we have a lot of flaws in our personality. We have a lot of things that are wrong with us. Lord, I admit to you, I have a lot of things that are wrong with me. Yet you know my heart. You know my heart. My heart says to you, boy, I just love you, Jesus. And you're my one goal in life. And I want to spend my life seeking you, what you want for me, not what I want. I just pray, Lord Jesus, that you teach me seek you. Teach me more and more to know you. And each day, to love you. So that I might be able to feed your sheep. For some of you this morning, as I've prayed this prayer, you've really prayed along with me. Well, you know that in your life, you've not really been seeking Jesus. You know you haven't been seeking him in your life, or maybe you've been kind of seeking him, but there have been a lot of other things along with it. I just wonder, with everybody's head bowed and eyes closed, I just wonder if there are some of you who just by simply raising your hand, just kind of an outward symbol of your inward commitment, would say in my life, "Boy, if I'm going to be in the ministry, if I'm going to be who Jesus wants me to be, I realize I haven't been seeking him.
education of our own minds and the filling of our hearts, I think that the time is always necessarily afforded to ask questions. If you have questions that you'd like to ask Barry, he's, feel free to answer them here for a few minutes before we move over to the cafeteria. If you have something that you would like to ask him about, what you heard yesterday in the seminar or here today, about what he's brought here to us this morning, now's the time to bring it up. He's going to come. We had to cut it off. Does anybody have any?